Over the weekend, there was a national tattoo convention in Kansas City at the Sheraton Hotel in Crown Center. The place was crawling with local artists, national celebrities, and people like Ashley. She came for what she thinks will be her 19th tattoo.
I have quite a few tattoos. I've kind of lost count.
It's a black and gray tattoo of Medusa, a gorgon from Greek mythology with venomous snakes for hair.
My first tattoo, I actually told my mom if she took me when I was 17, I wouldn't go crazy when I turn 18. Seems like that was a lie, but so I went and picked kind of a random one, and ever since then I've realized a lot of them are representation of where I'm from. I grew up in Louisiana, so I have a Magnolia, 504, and yeah, a lot of just representation of who I am and where I'm from, how I got to where I am today, so...
Telling your story, huh?
Yeah. one art piece at a time.
That's the coolest thing I think about tattoos, though, is that, like, you hear so many different varieties of people's stories, and then you get to come in and, like, put it on the skin, and it's, you know, permanent forever, so that's pretty groovy.
Mason Haney is the artist working on Ashley's tattoo. He's rushing to finish so he can enter it in a competition.
Laid all the foundation, the shading, got the line work done. Now we're just going back in and, like, trying to tighten everything and finish up. So we'll see. She's been crying most of the night.
Sounds fun? At another table, we met Garrett Sutton, who says that for him, tattoos are a way to make art and make a living.
I didn't really know what I could do with the art talent in general because, I mean, art really doesn't sell that well anymore. Figuring out, like, your style and what your niche is one of the hardest parts of doing this.
He's not sentimental about tattoos. For him, they're just a form of visual beauty. And his customer, a young woman getting a flower on her arm, agrees.
It's basically just enjoying art.
One of the most fascinating people we met at the tattoo convention was Jacob Schell. He told us about a new kind of tattoo he's doing. It's a tattoo that interacts with technology to play a sound. So you could get a tattoo of your baby cooing or the song you danced to at your wedding. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're talking with Jacob by Skype from his tattoo shop in Topeka. Hi, Jacob.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Ready for another long day of tattooing.
Yeah. So what exactly is it we're talking about here? You call it a sound wave tattoo, is that right?
Yes, it is. It's one of the latest, greatest technical ways of incorporating audio bits with your tattoos nowadays. It's actually a skin motion product called Soundwave that was just launched in December of 2017. So it's fairly new.
So explain, first of all, there are two parts of this. First of all, how the tattoo itself is, I guess, created. And then there's how you play it back. Start with that first piece.
Well, the clients who are wanting to do a sound wave tattoo, basically they have to get online with the skinmotion.com and actually get there and upload their sound clip, and it gives them an actual image. They create the sound wave image and bring it to me, and that's when I tattoo it.
So for people who don't know much about sound waves, I mean, if you work with audio, like at a radio station, you do, but it was unfamiliar to me when I first started in radio, these images that capture, you know, when your voice gets loud, it gets bigger, and when your voice gets small, it gets smaller, and it creates kind of a design that's the visual representation of vocal patterns or whatever other sound you're recording.
Yeah, it's a really wild, kind of a mirror imaged zigzag. I think a lot of people have seen it. It almost looks like a really wild key formation, if you will. It's kind of an audio key. More or less. But yeah, it is very much, it's almost like when someone goes to a counselor, you know, they do those little the images, you know, where they flash images. Yeah, it kind of looks like that, you know, a bunch of little sharp camel humps. And but yeah, it's a visual key that will also play an audio audio sound bit. It's really, really cool. But after I tattoo it, then they get back on to their that website or that app, and then they upload it, the image, the actual tattoo, and they link the sound together with it. And basically that's the activation part of it. And then they pay a small fee, I think monthly or yearly, actually, I should say. And I think it's good. It's like $10 for 4 years.
So it's it's a proprietary thing. It's not like this generalized thing that exists out there. It's all through a particular company, but people are doing it all over the country, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. The international. I'm like the top 17th in internationally, because they do have a nice little list of people that can do them, who are actually licensed. Just so that we all know, they don't just want to let anybody do these sound wave tattoos, because there comes a nice little set of rules or guidelines in order to do them correctly, so that they can be played over and over and over throughout the years.
Well, and then so to play it back, though, it's basically, I've seen videos of this. It's people holding their phones over the tattoos. And it looks like scanning it the way you would like a barcode at a grocery store.
Yeah. Just like a barcode, or those new the square barcodes that people scan. It's very much like that. You scan it with your phone on that using that app. Yeah, and it scans it, plays that sound wave sound bit right back to you.
Well, I want to hear
my girl.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
No, yeah, my girlfriend has her niece and nephew saying some really cute things to her, and so it brings a lot of joy to the ones that do sign up and do that. It's really, really cool.
Well, I want to hear some clips of people playing their sound wave tattoos. I got these clips from videos that were posted to Facebook, and this first one seems like a common choice, a parent with a tattoo of a child's voice.
Hey, Daddy, guess what? I love you so much.
And then this one is also a Valentine.
Hi, my love. Know I'm always with you and thinking of you. You water me, I water you. May we and our love grow infinitely. I love you forever. Mwah.
Are those pretty representative of the kinds of things people do with this technology?
Yes, they're always really sentimental. You know, loved ones, you know, young ones and old ones. Old voicemails are one of the most popular, because, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that last little, recording is on their voicemail of say their loved one that's deceased. And so, you know, it's a good way of letting that family member, you know, live on, you know, even longer.
You know, I think that idea is really cool, because there's something about a voice that captures personality and in a way that nothing else really does, especially if the voice is speaking directly to you. But I guess I worry about the technology piece of it. I mean, first of all, how do people know that their sound wave tattoos won't become unplayable as technology changes?
You know, that's a good question. But with, you know, the way technology is headed nowadays, I believe that, unfortunately, the internet, this Skin Motion site and app, you know, there's probably going to be other companies that are going to be jumping on board. And so there'll probably be other avenues, you know, and other ways for people to play these, because it is a true sound wave, design. And, you know, and it is very, very indicative of that sound. So, you know, there could be more, you know, more ways of playing it, and not just through that one company.
But I guess I even think if the way we use phones changes, or even if phones don't become the primary mode of doing all the stuff we do on phones now, I guess like an example would be, I wrote something really meaningful to me on like the world's oldest laptop computer. It used floppy disks. Yeah. And so that's how I backed it up. I still have it, but I cannot read it. And I don't know what's to stop that from happening to people's tattoos as our phones change, the way we use apps changes, if this company goes out of business.
Yeah, I bet that they will have ways of kind of how you can. There's some sort of, you know, adaption or converter. I'm sure that they'll probably be able to always play it, I'd imagine, on any other type of, you know, sound equipment. And also, I'd have to also mention that sometimes people get to meet their, you know, celebrities or famous people that they might not ever talk to again. And that's been a pretty cool hit also. Someone,
what do you mean? Like they get a song on their forearm and then meet the singer?
They get to, like, a coworker of mine, she got to interview Marilyn Manson, for example. And, you know, he actually said a little, you know, funny sentence to her, you know, with him knowing that she was going to convert it into a sound wave tattoo. And so, so yeah, you know, some people who are fortunate enough could even have their favorite celebrity saying something personalized to them, and then or incorporate that sound wave tattoo into their sleeve that's dedicated to that, you know, that rock band or et cetera. So there's some really other interesting ways of incorporating it too, and I guarantee my work forever. So, you know, save the sound wave tattoo and each touched up, I touch it up for free as well.
Well, when did you get into tattooing? I mean, I'm curious about whether this is whether this whole sound wave tattoo thing is part of some bigger change you're noticing in the industry.
Well, yeah, it's just one of many. It is getting more technical, the tattoo industry. The way that we draw and prepare some of our images is more technical on tablets. You know, and even the machines are becoming more high tech. You know, they're an electronic piece of machinery, and the machines are becoming more high tech. You know, you're getting wireless foot pedals and rotary machines and digital tablets for drawing on instead of paper. So it is really interesting to see how even tattooing has been, you know, staying caught up with the times and technology. And I've been tattooing for 15 years, and I've seen a lot of changes in just those 15 years. It's really amazing.
What are some of the other examples of changes you've noticed that really stand out to you?
Well, I do see styles change, and I'm also seeing, you know, the level of tattooing has skyrocketed. I feel like when I first started, I saw a lot of, really rudimentary style tattooing, you know, almost just coloring book style, you know, big, simple outlines and a limited color palette, you know, kind of these traditional style tattoos. Nowadays, you're having, you know, all the most beautiful pastels, colors, you know, and real nice, soft shades and blacks and grays, and you know, the sky's the limit. We even do black light ink tattoos.
Black light ink tattoos. Oh my gosh. Well, Jacob Schell, I know you have a client coming soon for a tattoo, so I'm going to let you go, but thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Jacob is the owner of Absolute Tattoo in Topeka. Up next on KCUR Central Standard, the story behind the Luce Park Rose Garden. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. You're listening to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and one of my favorite places this time of year is the Rose Garden in Luce Park. I consider it a civic landmark. People flock there for special occasions, for their photos that will commemorate a time in their lives, like prom or whatever, forever, for picnics and just everyday walks. But it comes without the kind of local mythology that usually surrounds our favorite landmarks. Well, this Sunday is Rose Day at what is officially known as the Laura Conyer Smith Municipal Rose Garden. So we're going to hear the little-known story behind that spot. Our guest is Cindy Price, and she's the president of the Rose Society. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning.
So what is the story behind the Rose Garden, how it came to be here?
Well, 87 years ago, Laura Conyers Smith convinced the city officials to give her a little section of Big Loose Park. So they gave her 1.5 acres, and she planned a rose garden with her friends. She knew a lot about the Seattle Rose Garden, and so she planted wonderful roses from Seattle, and they all promptly died. So she had to do a lot more research and discovered that there are certain roses that do a lot better in the Midwest. And so she persevered. She and her garden group planted more sustainable roses, or roses that were better suited for the Midwest, and has now it's developed into a glorious landscaped area.
When you say that she convinced city officials to give her a piece of land, I want to know more about that. I mean, who was she and what did it take to convince people?
You know, I really don't know too much about that, other than I know she lived about 2 blocks from Loose Park, and I knew that they were planning perhaps a tennis court area in the area that really finally has become the Rose Garden. So she said, wait a minute, you know, I would love to do a formal, beautiful rose garden, and please, you know, give me some land. So they did. I'm not really sure. I'm sorry. There is history about that that really is, I'm sure, very interesting.
Well, so this all happened in 1931, and the garden, that makes the garden, you know, almost a century old. Everything there is made out of stone. And I wonder how that's held up. I mean, it's got this, yeah, like you were saying, very formal design. And
it was designed by a local landscape architect, Herbert Hare. Hare and Hare is still in existence. They've been under the umbrella of another local landscape architectural firm now. But Hare and Hare designed the circular formal rose garden. And it didn't all happen all at once. But they built the pillars, they put up the wooden pergolas, they strung those heavy black chains, they put beautiful paths in between the quadrants of roses, of real fun, fine, crunchy gravel. So walking through the garden is just a delight in so many senses, just to see and to smell and to hear all the fun as you're walking through the garden. But that was created over 60 years ago. And 20 years ago, the Rose Society took a real hard look at our hardscape and realized that the pillars were crumbling, the wooden pergolas were really rotted, and we really needed to restore the garden. Actually, at first, our plan was to replace. And we went to some civic leaders and said, we'd like to raise about $1 million and replace some of these pillars. And one civic leader in particular, Jonathan Kemper, said, wait a minute, if you replace, I'm not with you. But if you repair and use the exact pillars that are there, so that they all match.
What was the significance of those original pillars?
Well, if you knock one down and replace it, no matter how hard you try, the stone will never exactly match. So he wanted, if he was going to be financially supportive of this effort, he said, no, I want to do it the right way, which really bumped up our finances by double.
Whoa.
To repair and restore is vastly more expensive than to replace.
So, but you did achieve that goal?
We did. Sandy Campuzano, who was one of our past presidents, took it upon herself to be a champion fundraiser. And she recruited donations from trust funds, foundations, civic leaders, Boy Scout troops. We have, you know, $1 donations to $100,000 donations.
There are, just backing up to the basic existence of this place in our city, I mean, so it's sort of in a round formation around a fountain.
Yes.
And there are so many different types of roses. And you're saying that originally the ones that were chosen were better suited for Seattle. Mm-hmm. But it is sort of interesting to me that there are so many varieties of roses that do thrive in a pretty harsh climate here.
Well, we have lots of sun. Roses love sun. We have in the garden now over 3,000 roses. That's 120 different varieties of roses. Some of them are miniflorals, grandiflorals, hybrid teas, and even more sustainable roses, knockout rose type things, plants that are very easy care. So we try to show Kansas Cityans this can be grown in this area.
If, you know, I would say that the peak season for the rose garden isn't especially long. Does that make like a certain time of year kind of, what would you define as the peak season?
Well, usually in the spring, we have the first blooms, the first blush, and which is why we always have Rose Day, the first Sunday in June, because we hope that the garden is going to be at its peak. This has been a crazy spring, so the garden was very delayed in its start. A month ago, the roses were an inch tall. We had to cut them way back to the ground level in many cases. And they're really starting to bloom now, but they will be blooming for the next month or so. Then it gets pretty hot in the middle of the summer, but then there's another big rush of blooms in the fall.
You know, something that has kind of intrigued me is, and this is maybe technically a little outside the rose garden, I'm not sure where the boundary is considered, but there's this structure nearby that's that same stone, but it's a restroom on one side, and then on the other side there's a pair of statues, a woman and a man, and I think it probably used to be a fountain, though I don't see water there now. It's called Adam and Even, and it's surrounded by a small herb garden with braille signage. An herb garden small enough that you could easily miss it, but it's really kind of a fascinating little feature.
That is a beautiful part. That is adjacent to the Rose Garden, and the Kansas City Rose Society focuses only on the Rose Garden, so we don't help care for the herb garden or the butterfly gardens. There are other organizations that help the city with supporting those different gardens.
But the whole like network of like garden area there, I mean, it used to be that the rose garden used to stand alone a little bit more, it felt like. I don't know, maybe I'm imagining that, but now with the Japanese center nearby and this herb garden.
Right. Loose Park is really developing lots of different areas. They have different organizations that support the different gardens. But we focus on the Rose Garden, and that's why we have Rose Day and have so many activities in June to bring people to the garden and remind them that this beautiful garden is tucked over here in a corner. It's a little out of sight, but please come and enjoy the fragrance and the visual stunning roses. Like I said, just even walking around on the gravel paths, the crunching underfoot is a delight. So,
what do you think this place means to Kansas City? I mean, just to individuals here.
Well, it is the gem in the Kansas City parks system. I mean, it is just a glorious formal garden. It's a world-class garden. It really is. And people come from all over the Midwest to see it specifically. And being that we are associated with the American Rose Society, people all over the United States do know about our garden. It's, well, I call it our garden, but it is Kansas City's garden. And it's a public place. But it was named finally for Laura Conyers Smith and the Parks Department. And
it sounds like it was just a person who liked roses.
And she was. She was a person who just liked roses.
Well, do you have a favorite rose in the garden?
Oh, I work on gold medal almost every time I go grooming.
Tell us about gold medal.
Well, it's a very fragrant rose. It's yellow. It's right by the fountain. I love to be there because I love to hear the sound of the fountain. I also have to say that in the early morning, it's shady, so it's really pleasant to stand there and work in the garden and not be in the total sun.
Well, Cindy Price, thank you so much.
Yes. You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Rose Day is this Sunday at Luce Park, and we're going to stay in the neighborhood coming up with the billboards of Warnell Road. If there is a Warnell billboard that you find intriguing, you can tweet us about it. We are at KCURCST. Whether you find it intriguing, hilarious, love it, or hate it, tell us about it. And we're talking billboards past and present. At KCURCST. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. If driving down Warnell Road is part of your Kansas City existence, you know a few things, like where to get a lamp or a vacuum cleaner or a rug. You also know that when I say your wife is hot, the punchline is you better get your AC fixed. I'm referring to a long-standing series of billboards for heating, cooling, and plumbing. Warnell is this rare example of a small city street that is absolutely plastered in billboards, mostly for small local businesses, and the people who run those businesses are characters who we recognize from our daily commutes. Today, we're going to meet a couple of them, Tarzan the Lawman, as well as the father-daughter real estate team, George and Ely Medina. Let's start with Tarzan the Lawman, Tristan Woods.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me in today. I appreciate it.
Okay, so you are, as I understand it from your billboard, a lawyer and animal rights activist?
I am. We do. We specialize in personal injury and criminal defense, but we brought something new to Kansas City. It's animal rights. And what we do, we advocate for all the animals that don't have a voice. We recently came to the attention of Laggy, the pit bull that got shot in the head twice. We did a big press conference with her. And we're actually going to file the civil suit on that. So that's what we kind of do. We kind of stem towards, you know, adult abused animals. And we really work with all the nonprofits in the community.
So how would you describe your billboard?
Well, I've got six billboards currently up right now. But the one on Warnell is me and my partner, Lauren Sierra, riding a tiger. And it's a fierce defense. We kind of try to bring a strong point to the billboard. You know, like we're strong advocates for, you know, people as well. And our, you know, we brought the animal theme with it as well. So Tarzan the Lawman not only does law, but he also does for the animals as well. So my billboards kind of encompass the animals with what I do.
When did you come up with the name Tarzan the Lawman?
You know, I was in Miami and I was thinking, I've always worked personal injury. I was thinking, what could I bring to Kansas City? It's a smaller city than I've worked in LA and Miami. I've been attorneys doing stuff there for them with personal injury. And I was thinking, what can I do to make a splash in Kansas City? So I decided, you know, let's do an animal theme. I've got long hair. My partner's got black hair. And so we kind of thought, oh, what about a Tarzan and Jane theme? And I think Kansas City's a big enough city to be able to, you know, to kind of come in and do that marketing, be outside the box. Attorneys are kind of looked at as kind of boring people, you know, just read to the books. And I just wanted to bring some humor to it and attention.
So what has the response been?
It's been really good. I do a TV show on Channel 41, and we're actually starting a national TV show in 2 weeks. They're starting to shoot out here to film. So it's going to be about me and my partner following us around. It's going to be kind of not just local. We're going to be flying around the country and doing things with that for the animals. So it's kind of the billboards kind of brought that on. And then I do a lot of commercials as well, but the billboards pretty much just brought my name out.
Okay, let's back up. How did you get into animal rights?
Well, I've always been a big animal lover. And we just...
I mean, tell me about that, your background with animals.
Well, my mother, she does a lot of... She's worked for Chain of Hope. It's a nonprofit animal rescue group in Kansas City for a lot of years. And so when I'd come into town, I'd always work with her on there. I'd go into town and kind of, you know, help with the dogs. And I figured, you know, you see a lot of... There's a lot of things that's, you know, you get to catch on the news, and animals are a big part of that. And I was thinking, let's just encompass the theme with my animals and my law. But the thing with the animals, we don't make any money on it. We pretty much do them all for pro bono. But it gets the voices out there for animals. There's always attorneys who advocate for people and, you know, give the money to the organizations for the people. So I was like, well, why don't I give some money to the animals? And so we can bring their voices up and, you know, make light of them. I do a lot of things in my social media, Jungle Law Group. You can go in there and find out all my animal rights that I do and all the people that I support.
So when you talk about, though, giving voice to the animals,
yeah,
that is sort of interesting concept. I mean, how do you represent, for example, a pit bull?
Okay, so I'll take you through that a little bit. So what happens is that's the prosecution has to prosecute the person who did it. However, I can kind of push that along, bring light to it. You know, we did a big press conference where all the news stations were held a couple weeks ago for that. That brought light to it. I'm trying to put up a registry for the Missouri and Kansas side, which means if you get convicted of aggravated cruelty for an animal, felony, your picture, your name, your registry's all out there. So you find it, people who did this. I can't do the criminal side, but what we do, we file a civil lawsuit, which maybe prevent people from doing it in the future. That's all we're trying to prevent something to get somebody on the books to show, hey, there is somebody out there who can help these animals. Because, you know, a lot of people just go to the wayside. A lot of the prosecutors are just kind of pleading them down from felonies to misdemeanors to get them off their books. You know, if you have people that are out there speaking about things like that, it kind of makes them think twice about pleading something out possibly.
You seem really passionate about this, which in a way...
I have to be. Somebody's got to be out there doing it. You know, it's just, it's crazy. You know, we got a Wichita case that's out of control. This guy, I don't even want to speak about it, got caught sodomizing a 5-month-old dog. It's actually really true. It's on the internet. You Google Wichita, man, this was a couple weeks ago. I'm going to go ahead and help on that case. They did a rape kit on the guy for the dog. I mean, this is, you wouldn't even believe it. It's just, you can't write this stuff.
Your passion, though, and real seriousness on some level kind of surprises me, because the billboard, yeah. I mean, you were saying makes light. It does seem like it was meant to be funny.
It was meant to be funny, but when you come into my office, I got a very serious office at 2300 Main Street. My partner's very passionate about animals and people. I mean, we're just, you know, that's kind of what brought people into us. But, you know, once you meet us, it's not what you're, I mean, we're very serious about what we do. So, you know, that's just, you have to do that to be able to, you know, to run a law firm. It's kind of funny on things. We try to bring people in by our advertisements, and then once they meet us, they're like, those people are actually really serious, you know.
What is your personal background?
My personal background in regards to what? Like how just, how I came about doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah, like
or
how
an
you came into law, how you came okay. into the, like how these two interests, animals and law, how they started and
yeah,
then how they came together.
Okay. I'm originally from Kansas City. I went to Rocker's College. The day after I graduated Rocker's College, I drove out to L.A. with a buddy from here. And then I did some acting, was on a soap opera for a little bit. And then I talked to my buddy who's an attorney in New York, Chris McGrath. And I said, hey, I said, you know, what do you think I should do? He's like, well, why don't you go to law school? He's like, you know, if you don't like it, you at least have something you can do beyond law. A lot of people who have law degrees, there's other things to do besides law. So I ended up getting my law degree. Ended up, you know, meeting my partner, Lauren Sierra, who we're engaged. And we did a lot of traveling throughout the world. So we started doing, like, we went to Thailand and did the Golden Triangle, did an elephant sanctuary there. And then we did to Italy. We did up in the Swiss Alps. We did the Swiss Mountain Dog Sanctuary. So we were just starting to do a lot of things with that. And we were like, you know, let's...
When you say do the animal sanctuary, what does
yeah.
that mean?
We actually worked with them. You can go work with the dogs for a couple of days. You can work with the elephants. You can kind of be out in the field and kind of see how this stuff works. You know?
As tourists?
No, well... We were in the elephants, but not the dog rescue groups, which was pretty extraordinary. So we were invited up to do that, and we ended up, you know, just helping out with them, and it was pretty cool.
What? Tell me about that experience.
It was in the Swiss Alps. It was about a little above Italy's where we were at, and we were just emailing things, and they said, you know, can you come up to this sanctuary? We'd like to meet with you guys. And we said, yeah, absolutely, because we were like a big advocate for dogs in the city. So we're like, yeah, we'll come up there. It was really cool. So.
Well, so you kind of quickly mentioned that you were an actor in a soap opera.
I was. So
I'd like you to say more about that.
I was on Port Charles for a while. It's an L.A.-based soap opera. I did a little bit of Under Fives, a few of those. My character name was Ryan on the show. So
Tell me about Ryan.
He was a blonde-haired guy, surfer, who was a bartender. I only did a few shows on that, but it didn't reoccur too often, but I got a few shows, so it's tough out in L.A. You know, coming from Missouri, it's very difficult to kind of break through and keep your name out there. So.
Soap opera actor and lawyer seem like very different directions to me.
It does seem different directions, but, you know, I'm an attorney, but I kind of like the entertainment field. That's kind of why I envisioned doing the entertainment, like TV shows and things and do law-related things. We kind of built this all around. Hopefully we might do like TV one day with Tarzan and Jane. We didn't think it'd come this quickly. We've had a lot of calls and we've signed with some companies. So
the billboard in some way is like where you've channeled some of that soap opera acting stuff.
Yeah, because our first billboard came in December and we just had a swinging in billboard. We weren't even, our law practice hadn't even opened up, and it was me and Lauren. We were wearing loincloths swinging from trees off I-35. The big corner right there is how it all started.
You like actually went out and were swinging off of trees?
No. Okay. Our billboard to us. But it was.
Because I was about to be like, no, you didn't.
But my new commercial I have out, I'm swinging in a tree, and it's yeah, with my monkey that I have on me from a Monkey Island Rescue Group. So she comes with me on all my commercials. So that's kind of how and all my yeah, that's kind of how it started.
The monkey comes with you on all your
commercial sets. Yeah, she's with me. Baby Jane, I'm from Monkey Island.
Tell me about her.
Oh, she's great. She's a white-faced baboon. She's a rescued animal. And she's just, we've shot 5 commercials. We've done a Spanish commercial on Univision. She came for that. She's worked really well with me. So I really
enjoy
her.
What do you mean by worked really well with you? What, I mean, it's like you have a rapport?
Maybe we do. She only does it. She's only a 2-take monkey. So you got to do your takes really quick. She got to be able to say your lines and everything because she only does a couple. And then she gets kind of a little bit scared and wants to go back to Dana, the owner. So
well, okay. So we are talking to Tristan Woods, Tarzan the Lawman. You may know him from his billboards. We are talking about the billboards of Warnell, and
I've got a new one coming up on 85th and Warnell too. So I stuck with the location for you guys. So I got that'll be in a week.
Well, so if you have a favorite Warnell billboard or something to say about a Warnell billboard, could even be the Warnell billboards we are discussing right now. Call 816-235-2888. Or send us a tweet. We're at KCURCST. Now I am joined by Ely and George Medina, a father-daughter realtor team. They are often in matching outfits.
Are we?
Today we are.
Not. You are both in off-white, but that might just be a coincidence.
He wears a lot of Tommy Bahama. I can't always keep up.
Well, I am. So you guys seem to like hold court at a particular corner on Warnell, but that's been for a long time.
Yes, it's been about over 6 years.
And so it has taken on, I feel like you guys have taken on a persona. Like, do people recognize you out and about in town and try to talk to you? Or
yes, they do. I grew up in the neighborhood. I lived in Waldo. I live in Brookside now. I married my high school sweetheart. You know, my kids went to school in the neighborhood. So yeah, we kind of, I don't know. I don't want to say local celebrities, but yeah, everywhere we go, it doesn't matter if we're shopping or church or where, you know, restaurants or bars, we always, you know, are recognized. So I guess it's kind of fun.
And George, it used to be just you on the billboards.
Yes, that's before Ely came. It was just me originally.
And then Ely, talk to me about becoming part of, I mean, obviously, not just a billboard campaign. You became part of this real estate venture.
It became
a family business.
Well, George, I call him, we've always been very close. He came to every sports game I ever played in my whole life through college. And so when I was in grad school, I decided to go ahead and get my real estate degree. One summer, I wasn't quite sure what I would do when I graduated. And after I graduated, I started helping him out, thinking, yeah, maybe I'll do this for a year until I find what I want to do. Maybe I'll move abroad. Maybe I'll move somewhere else. And then here we are 6 years later, and I have no plans to, you know, leave the Brookside-Waldo area anytime soon.
So what was it about real estate? I mean, growing up watching a realtor parent, what was it that made you think, yeah, this is something I could do too?
It's just kind of real estate, something that just happens. And honestly, you kind of have to just give it a try. I feel like people watch shows on TV and it's not at all what it's really like in real life. So it gives a lot of false perspective. And, you know, the first year was all grunt work. It wasn't fun. It wasn't dazzling. It was by no means my dream job. But I'm a very outgoing person. We both have lived in Kansas City, you know, all of our lives. So we had a natural network and I love making new friends. So just the networking aspect in itself was really appealing to me. I get to go out there and do something different every day. Yes, I work nights, weekends, sometimes 7 days a week, but I'm always out there with people. I'm not behind a desk all day, and I get to see people, their true happiness, but I also work with a lot of different personality types, and we go through a lot of hard negotiations together too, and I think it just kind of makes me a better realtor and better person every time we go through that.
But you guys are really very like closely affiliated with this particular neighborhood and have been. George, I mean, talk about when you started, what real estate was like in Brookside and Waldo.
Well, I've actually had a license for 21 years, but I've only been full time 11 years. So I've seen a lot of changes. You know, it's cyclical, up goes up and down like anything else. And so you know, I was, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to just look into having a billboard right there. And I looked. There was no billboards on State Line. There wasn't any on Ward Parkway. And the first billboard, as you head south from the plaza, is 72nd and Ward Parkway. So I got on a waiting list and ended up going, you know, from there. The rest is history.
So what did you do before you were in real estate?
I sold liquor wholesale in Kansas City. I did that for over 20 years. And then I was able to do this, the real estate part-time, which really helped me a whole lot. So they let me do this for, you know, 10 years part-time. And so it was great. I thought it was awesome. I sold liquor during the day, got people drunk, and I'd sell my house at night and weekends. So it was a great deal. I did that for 10 years.
When you did move on to the billboard, what can you talk to me a little bit about your thoughts behind how you were going to sort of present yourself? Because I believe at one time there was a claim to like Waldo real estate royalty.
I don't know if that was us or not, but I didn't really know. I wanted to just try the billboard. I think I did it for a month and I got a lot of, you know, positive reaction from the public and my friends and neighbors. And so then I went ahead and signed up for a year, and I never knew it'd be, you know, 6 years later, we're still on the same billboard, the same location and so forth. But no, it was great. I did a lot of business that way, but you know, just the location's incredible. I mean, if you knew exactly where it was, I mean, there's,
yeah, it's at around 75th and Warnell, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, so for you, when Ely came on, the matching outfits, like the Royals. I don't know, the Royals gear. Things that I feel I know about you from your billboard include lighthearted things like Royals fandom, but also looking back, I mean, some really difficult pieces of your family history, like a struggle with breast cancer.
That's correct. My wife, Betsy, had breast cancer about 17 years ago. And actually, because of her, and it was her idea, I started making our signs. My name's in pink, or our name's in pink with a pink ribbon. It's all because of Betsy. And that helped a lot. And I did a lot of pointer signs that would go up and down different main streets. And my name's still in pink and with a pink ribbon and so forth. So I kind of did that with her. We've had, you know, ups and downs, but that was a neat thing to be able to put her on the billboard. And we've done a lot of different things, sports related, seasonal things, things about how the market's strong and so forth. So there's been so many billboards that can't mention them here on radio.
Ely, when you came into the picture, or even before you did, when it was just your dad's billboards, was there something strange about having a family story in some way being told at an intersection across from a Quick Trip?
It could be if you didn't know my family. There's four of us, my parents and then my younger sister, and we're all extremely outgoing, fun-loving people. So actually, we've had so much fun with it. We love driving our friends by it that are in from out of town or even that just live outside the neighborhood. I'm a little surprised none of my friends have gotten up there and graffitied my face, but they haven't. So we'll keep it up.
Tell me about the Call Me Maybe billboard.
Yes, that was, I think, our first like quirky, lighthearted billboard. I think it was your second one. It was George's second. It was before I was on the team. So his original one was just a normal business card type picture. The second billboard was when that Carly Rae Jepsen song was so popular, Call Me Maybe. So we said to my dad, my sister and I were like, you have got to put this on the billboard. So we came up with a little design that said, here's my number, so call me maybe. And it was still his business picture, but there was some music notes on the billboard. And we started getting so many calls. People were like, we almost wrecked our car into the pole. We were laughing so hard. I had to pull over. You know, I mean, the feedback was amazing. And so we decided we really need to try and do some more fun, lighthearted stuff because that's what the people are paying attention to.
Are there any that you just feel like that didn't work?
You know, I've actually loved all the ones we've had. We most recently had a Cinco de Mayo one that I know not everyone loved, but it was still one of my favorites, and I thought it was hilarious.
Describe it.
It was my dad and I in sombreros, and it said, "We sell houses rápido," which means we sell houses quickly, which is the truth. And it was just a fun billboard we put up in the beginning of May, and we didn't think that people would turn it into a racial thing. We actually are Hispanic, so that also didn't cross my mind that people would have a problem, but I think we just...
The sombreros might have seemed like maybe tokenizing or stereotyping.
Sure. And I think a lot of people thought, what are these white people doing with sombreros on? But George is 100% Mexican. It wasn't something we thought twice about. We have fun with our family.
I'm still adjusting to the fact that you call him George. But George, tell me about that part of your history and why you wanted to do a billboard about Cinco de Mayo.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been Hispanic. Both my parents are from Mexico, and my mom's passed away. And, you know, we were kind of looking at things. We always look at something different. And it's hard because sometimes you got to think of, because so many people always say, God, I love your last billboard. It was awesome. So it really puts pressure on us to do a better, more exciting one. So trust me, it's hard. It's not like we just pull something out of our hat and say, hey, let's throw this up there. So again, it was good timing. It was, you know, Cinco de Mayo. We put it up on May 4th. Ely's birthday's May 3rd. She was having a big party. She always has a Cinco de Mayo party like around then. And it was on Saturday. A lot of her friends were in from out of town. So we just thought, hey, let's do it and stuff. So, you know, I did have a mustache on there, you know, as well, but I can't grow a mustache. So I thought this would be cool. I have a mustache for a little bit. So other than that, it's great. I'm proud of, you know, being Hispanic, and you know, I just thought, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal. So
did your parents came from Mexico to Kansas City?
Yes, both parents did.
Tell me about the story of their arrival here. And yeah, like we just want to get to know you. We see you on our drives, you know.
My grandpa, your dad, has lived in the same house in Waldo for how many years?
55 years, I guess it was. You know, I didn't get to know his parents that I was really little. So I know they came from a small town. My dad grew up here in Kansas City on the west side. My mom was from Guadalajara. Okay. And so she came here, and all of her relatives and everybody live there. And so, you know, I know that, I know her dad, I guess, and I didn't know this till later, I guess my mom's dad, you know, he was from Spain. So, you know, there's just a lot of history, and we're trying to find out our roots right now. It's kind of finding, like, you know, who we might be related to or whatever. But anyway, yeah, we're proud, and we were just trying to have fun and so forth, like we do every time, you know. And so,
I mean, for all three of you sitting in this room, the Medinas as well as Tristan Woods, all characters from Warnell billboards, but also real people in our community. It seems like the desire to have fun is a big part of what brings you to this, like, world of Warnell billboards.
Yeah, I believe you got to have fun in life. I mean, there's too many things out there that are serious. So I think people need to let their guard down and just enjoy their day while they're driving, maybe bring a laugh to somebody. So that's kind of what my billboards do. I get a lot of calls like, you know, some are good, some are bad, but, you know, if you're calling me, then you're thinking about me. So I kind of feel like that's a win.
Tell me about some of those other kinds of calls, though.
I'll get some calls where they do the Tarzan call, like they'll go, ah, that kind of stuff with me, and then they, you know, they say, are you really a lawyer? You know, what are you doing on top of a tiger? I'm like, well, I am, so why don't you come into my office and we'll talk? So it's kind of stuff like that. But it's fun. It's interesting. It's a roller coaster. It's up and down with some of the calls, but I enjoy it. But I appreciate you for having us on.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tristan Woods, for joining us.
Okay.
And George and Ely Medina, thanks to both of you.
Can we say a little plug about we're with Reese Nichols?
Okay.
Realtors. 76 Estate Line. We've always been there. Only one company, same office. So, also, Tristan actually looks like Tarzan. So, if anybody ever sees him, I mean, he really does. So,
let's see if you sound like him.
I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Kind of jealous of his hair.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You can send us Warnell Billboard photos on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. The audio from today's show will be available later today at kcur.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow, we will hear from designers in this year's fashion show. We'll visit a small exhibit at the Nelson and more as part of our first Friday art show. Tune in at 10. This show is produced by Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Sylvia Maria Gross with help from intern Trevor Fox and lots of contributions from Anna Yukatenko. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.